Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hi everyone, just a quick favor to ask before we get going. Our podcast has gone from strength to strength lately, but we'd like to find out how we can improve. We've put together a short survey and we would love to get your feedback. Anyone who takes the time to give their feedback will be entered into competitions where they can win prizes such as smartphones, cameras and drones. So please visit irishtechnews.ie/podcast-feedback. That's irishtechnews.ie/podcast-feedback. Fill out the survey and to be in with a chance of winning one of those great prizes. Thanks for your time, and now back to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. My name is Melanie Boylan, and today I'm joined by Dr. Niall Smith, who's the head of research at Munster Technological University and the head of Blackrock Castle Observatory. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Melanie. Nice to be here.
We really should find shorter names for our guests.
Just call me Niall.
So welcome today. And we've got a lot to actually cover in today's podcast because you do seem to have your finger in an awful lot of pies, Niall. So, but first of all, I want to ask you about a certain event that's happening towards the end of this month. It's about a hackathon. What can you tell us about it?
Yes, so this is a Cassini hackathon. And I guess the first thing to think about is if you're an entrepreneur who is looking for new ideas, new markets for your product or process, new ideas for new markets, or if you have thought in the past, well, space isn't really anything to do with me, the hackathon will give you an opportunity to change your mind about that. And the reason why it may do that is that the space industry is changing very rapidly and it's becoming much more driven by private industry, small companies, startups, people straight out of college. But also on the other side, there are some mature companies who are realizing that actually they can put some of their efforts into what is an industry that's by 2030 will be worth 2 trillion euros. So because of the scale of the industry, we're trying to get people to think now, okay, rather than think space is for other people or for other countries, that I can actually get involved with a relatively small idea, a small amount of money. In this case, you get some money if you do well as part of your participation in the hackathon. And that might then take you forward with the knowledge that space can help your idea to grow as a business. So this is really all about getting people to think in money terms, really. Now, of course, your business may be about sustainability. And if it is, or if it has as part of the sustainability, if it cares about that, then this hackathon is additionally for you because it's all about the greening, the digital greening effectively. So trying to see how do we use space to move information around the planet? How do we do things, for example, maybe like take images of crops, images of methane emission from herds of cattle or whatever, in a way that will help us to make the planet more sustainable. So if you have that and the idea, and at its core, there's, you know, addressing the climate emergency, climate action and so on, or if it's something that is going to make us all, you know, live in a world where there's more equity, then this type of hackathon is for you. But at the moment, you might be thinking, if you're listening to the podcast, yeah, but I don't see how space is going to help me to do that. And I guess that's where getting involved in the hackathon hopefully will change your mind.
So the types of businesses, it doesn't necessarily have to be space, but an interest in space would be useful.
Yes, so an interest in space would be useful, but we have seen people who've pivoted their business. I know that's very much a pandemic a term, Melanie, but we've seen people who've pivoted their business from making use of rubber from car tires to materials that are used on rockets, for example, out of that same very resilient rubber. So I would say that even if you're thinking, I have no interest in space, put your entrepreneur or your business hat on for the hackathon and think, I want to run a successful business. I want to employ maybe lots of people. Maybe I want to make lots of money. Maybe I just want to make a living. Whatever part of the part of that continuum of what you want to do with a business. And even maybe only some of it may come from your activity with space. So some of it might be things that you do on the ground. Some of it might be things that you do that go up into space. Or realistically, Melody, a lot of it will be to do with what we call, it's fairly obvious comment actually, I was going to say it sounded technical, but it isn't at all. So the data products, just, you know, things that, you know, images or positional information that satellites beam back to us. A lot of that, if you're in the European Union area, is free to you as a company. So it's not even as if you have this big upfront capital investment. And if you are able to manipulate data, you are really have got some really interesting challenges. So it doesn't have to be hardware. It doesn't have to be putting stuff up. You're not necessarily having to launch space. In fact, the vast majority of companies will just take advantage of satellites that already exist.
Right. And I'll be honest with you, when I think hackathons, I think, you know, teenagers and, you know, young people in general, but this is not that type of event, is it?
No, and we ran a hackathon with the National Space Centre during COVID, actually during May last year. Some of the winning companies were already established companies, and they had been in the business a long time. And what they were able to do was, I suppose, use their experience as companies, and they weren't space companies, to use that very quickly to convert it into space. And what the hackathon did was, it allowed them to get just a little bit of experience from some real global experts on how you might actually use the data, how you might get access to the data, and how you might use the data. And so data, again, could be images, or it could be images that, for example, in the visible, it could be in the infrared. There's a thing called synthetic aperture radar, which allows satellites to see through cloud. So there's lots of different developments in that area. Can I just say as well, Melinda, of course, if you are young and you are a hacker, in a sense that you just love trying new things, it's also for you, because we're, you know, we want to see people with ideas at any age and at any stage of business development. We know that from our experiences in the technology university here, the Munster Technological University, that the level of entrepreneurship amongst our students is okay. I have to say it, it's astronomical.
So, oh God!
I know, couldn't resist. So it really is. It is just amazing what young people come up with, and their resilience and their motivation once you show them an opportunity. And so, I know it might sound cliched, but the hackathon is for everyone. Also, by the way, not just for men. So we saw last year that more than half of the participants in the hackathon last year, and already it's starting to shape this way this year, are females. This is great. This is what we want to see. We encourage this. And we don't encourage for any other reason than equity. And honestly, if we get the best brains using the best data, that's what's going to make this planet of ours most sustainable. And that's what's most likely to solve global problems. So this is really all about us working together. Even if we're working in our individual companies, in some sense, what the hackathon does is it just tries to get lots of really interesting, smart, motivated people. You don't have to be brilliant at maths or physics or something like that. Mm-hmm. You just might have a really interesting creative business idea. So then in that case, get somebody who might be the person who'll analyze the data for you. And you might be the person on the team who exploits the data and sees the market opportunity. So that's the type of groups of individuals who could come from anywhere. I should also say, if you don't have a group, log on, register on the Cassini Hackathon website. And we can help to do the marriage making for you, or the matchmaking for you, maybe more matchmaking than marriage.
Well, look, it worked for Little Mix and it worked for One Direction. So I'm sure it will work with your hackathon.
There you go. There you go. I like the analogy. But yeah, so you don't even have to have a team put together and you don't have to be able to cover all bases. So and that, I think, should make it exciting. You know, you meet people, new ideas, and they can be from across. They can be from anywhere in Europe as well. So you could end up with a very multinational team that you're part of. And who knows where that goes in the future. So it's...
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a... If you were to target this to C-suite and corporates, you'd be calling it a global think tank, wouldn't you? This amounts to the same thing, but you're targeting a different end result.
Yeah, no, that's a really good idea. I mean, you know, the sorts of comments about you don't know what you don't know. And I remember it's a comment, and I'm sure there'll be people listening who'll know the exact correct form of this. But I remember being at an airport and reading a piece in a business magazine about Steve Jobs. And one of the things that I remembered, now I was too mean to buy the magazine, so I don't have a copy of it, but I did that flicking that you do at airports. But one of the things he said was, don't be concerned so much about your competitors, but do be concerned about innovators. Mm. Innovators are effectively people who do things that you just simply didn't think about. And hackathons like this one are really all about, let's get those innovators out there, those people who have an idea that nobody else has really thought of, because that's what's likely to disrupt markets. That's what's likely to give you the competitive advantage. If you're just doing what somebody else is doing and you're doing it better, of course that can be good. Of course that's good. But if you can do something that's really a bit different and makes you stand out from the crowd, then that's something that I think we would all like to find and to capture.
You know, in passing, in conversation that we recently had, you mentioned about the provision of broadband in low Earth orbit. Is this something that's already happening or you'd like to see happen?
Yeah, so it has begun. So there's a couple of interesting angles on this, because my background is in astronomy, so I like to look at the night sky, and I like to use telescopes and take images of objects which are very faint. And there's a number of reasons why that's important. Just before I come to, by the way, it's all connected, Melanie, to the low Earth orbit broadband. But to do that, I need to be able to see the skies without interference. And by doing that, something really interesting happens. We learn about our place in the universe. We learn that, for example, the molecules in you and me actually were made in stars that exploded and then went on to form our planet, and then they got absorbed into you and me. So without stars, you and me don't exist. And we know that those stars actually haven't been around forever, because we know the universe has a finite age. Mm. So astronomy tells us something very fundamental about who you and me are as individuals and how we're connected together. I think in the long run that will, as we continue to educate people about this in this type of information, it will help us to have a more global perspective. So we'll need to have a perspective where, of course, we celebrate cultural and other differences, but at the same time recognize that, you know, we're all linked truly by the universe in which we live. As we know, if we can't look at the skies above, and we still have lots of many unanswered questions that we need to be able to look at the skies above. However, at the same time, we need to ensure that people who are in countries that are underdeveloped, in countries where there's a lot of poverty, where there is also that inequity where the females are much more likely to be in poverty than the males. Mm-hmm. And so education is a way to help you to get out of that. It's not an overnight thing, but it helps you get out of that. The problem that we have at the moment on the planet is many of us, and we're doing this podcast over the internet, and we're recording it, so we're taking advantage of something that we just take for granted. But in large parts of the world, about half of the world, about 3 billion people, 3.5 billion people, really have no access at all to the internet. So we can't get into their homes with education. I'm not even talking about Twitter and Facebook. I mean, those are valid things, of course, and so on. But even in terms of, you know, educational provision, we can't get there. However, low Earth orbit satellites, the likes of those which have been the most common one that people would know about, would be the Starlink constellation from SpaceX, which causes all the hullabaloo about brightening up the night sky, which is why I said brightening up the night sky. But they have the potential to provide broadband in areas where no other technology can do so in a short timescale. So if I'm a female in certain parts of the world, or indeed a male in a poverty place. I'm maybe unaware of this for obvious reasons now, because I don't have access to that type of information. But I may be unaware that there is a technology which very rapidly could change my access to education and my ability to upskill and my ability to help them to grow the community I'm with, or the region I'm with, or the country I'm with, and bring that up to a level where there's more equity across the country. So even in Ireland, we have situations where we have communities who struggle because they can't get broadband at the moment. Of course, we have a national broadband plan, and in due course, that will probably happen. But we have satellites flying over our head right now, as you and me talk right now, that we can connect to. They're in low Earth orbit, so they're sort of 400 to 500 kilometers above our heads, that are already able to provide us with internet. We've tested some of that here in the university. We've done some tests with the Starlink constellation, and it's a very impressive advance forward. By the way, I'm no promoter of Starlink or anything. I'm talking about the general people who have put up most satellites at the moment, mainly. But if in the morning somebody comes up and puts up better ones, I'll be saying the same thing. It's a general comment that I'm making about the low Earth orbit satellites. So what they do is they allow us to really cover the globe with this connectivity. And it's not just for gaming. And I guess that's why I get sometimes almost frustrated when we say, well, the internet, you know, and you need 4K this and you need 10K gaming that and so on. And you can tell I'm not a gamer. But I know that if you have even 1 meg or half a megabit per second, it's totally transformation compared to having 0 megabits per second. You know, I mean, we all like to have a high definition and so on, and that's true. But you don't have to have that sort of technology. So we have the capability in the next few years as a species on this planet, because of the brains that have evolved inside our skulls, to provide broadband to huge numbers of additional people across the planet. So we also have the possibility of destroying a lot of the night sky in the process. So for me, here's the challenge. And I'd love somebody to listen to the podcast to be thinking to myself, I want to make a material that can be used on a satellite, which basically reflects almost nothing. Because the issue at the moment is this. Satellites, we've had so few satellites in general that we haven't really noticed them, you know. Now that we have thousands of them coming online, you start to notice them. So, and because they're low in Earth orbit, just like if something is close to you, you know, it seems bigger or brighter or whatever, then what we just need to do is to figure a way to make them black. Now, I know of no fundamental physics that says you can't do that. It might be a challenge for material science, but we've seen the challenge of getting vaccines out in a year for the pandemic. I'm absolutely convinced, because the physics doesn't prevent it, that somebody will come up with materials which will allow us to darken these satellites. SpaceX have already done some mitigation on it. It's not good enough yet. But I think this is an exciting area. If I'm wrong, and my hero Carl Sagan would say, I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, then we'll have to reassess. But at the moment, we have this massive potential societal good. And we have this also massive rationale for why it's still important to look at the night skies, and we shouldn't throw that away in our rush for societal good. So what we really just need is to figure out how we make these satellites dark. A little bit more nuanced than that, but if we could start with that, that would be a really good start to solving, to taking advantage of what I think is a little bit like going from the steam engine to the diesel locomotive. Now, I know diesel is going out of fashion now. When we change from steam.
Honestly, you're picking from one controversial topic to another.
To another.
let's avoid any more controversy and step away gently from that particular topic, Mr. Sustainability. So we recently had a partial solar eclipse. Did you see it?
It was cloudy where I was.
Oh, so it was cloudy here as well?
Directly, yeah. No, I didn't see it, unfortunately.
Oh, Jordan. Gutted.
Yeah.
Because it's another 4 years before we see another one. But
There is one that you can see. It won't be quite as good next year in 2022. But and if you're willing to travel around the world, and you can pick up a few more in between, they're great things to see. Interestingly, although the one from yesterday that was a partial solar eclipse, when you get total solar eclipses where the moon completely blocks out the sun, a lot of actually really interesting science still gets done when that happens. So it's a little bit like if you'll see in some movies when this car arrives and you just know it's got the villains in it, but the headlights are on, so you can't really see the car. You can't tell who's in it. And then somebody walks in front of the headlight and then you can see behind, are the villains because they blocked out the light. And I know what it might be sound like a silly analogy. It's exactly the same thing with the sun. And by blocking out the headlight, which is the sun, you can see what's around it. And it turns out that the sun is this massive atmosphere, which is called the corona. And in order for us to understand the sun, we have to understand that. And it's very hard to see. There are ways to do it, but we can actually see it really well during a total eclipse of the sun. And also during 1919, a British astronomer called Arthur Eddington measured the bending of light around the sun during a total eclipse, which proved that Einstein's general theory of relativity was correct. So Einstein said that light is bent around objects that have mass. So the sun is a big mass. It's a very big object, the biggest object by far in the solar system. And there was a star behind the sun, which effectively you should have been able to see, but the prediction was that its light would have been bent around the sun and it would become visible. And sure enough, it was visible. Not only was it was visible by exactly the amount that Einstein predicted.
He was a clever man.
He would have done well in a hackathon, possibly.
He would have done well, yeah. Done credit. Yeah. So it's interesting, actually, because I've come across the concept of star shades or sun shades in the past, mm-hmm. and the James Webb telescope has something similar as well. But that's another podcast. You can listen to that another time. It's called The Flight of the Bumblebee, if anybody's interested, about the capability of this incredible transformer. But I'd like to talk to you now about, I've been waiting for this for the end.
This sounds ominous.
About a miniature that you have had an involvement with. Tell us about this little miniature rover.
So we have been working on looking at how you could have small rovers on the surface of the moon that would I'm going to backtrack for a second, Melanie. So on the moon rotates every 28 days, roughly. Oh. So it goes through the phase. We know the moon does that. So for 14 days, you're on the moon, you're basically in lunar night. For 14 days, you're in lunar day. If you're on the lunar day part of the moon, then the temperature is roughly boiling. If you're in night, it's roughly minus 200 degrees centigrade. So what we were looking at with a Canadian company was how you would develop a small rover which would be able to survive during the lunar night, but didn't require big batteries. So you can survive with the lunar night, and we've seen this. We've seen Chinese missions. We've seen a number of different missions to the far side of the moon. By the way, the far side of the moon, it's an obvious comment, but it's not always dark. It just happens to be the side that's away from the Earth. It does happen to be dark for 14 days and then bright for 14 days. But we were working on some very interesting technologies which would use the brightness of the Earth to power the lunar rover. So very clever, we think, use of a different solar power source. The Earth is
interesting. So it's almost like a Mars orbiter. You're treating the Earth like a Mars orbiter around the moon.
Yes, exactly. And we're using it as almost like a mirror to reflect back. So think of when you go out and you look at the moon and how bright it is, if you know, at night. Well, the Earth is about seven times brighter than that. So there's actually a reasonable amount of energy gets reflected from the Earth to the Moon. So we were looking at how you could harvest that energy, and then you could make smaller orbits. Now, why is that important? Well, the thing that makes it expensive to get to the Moon, there's a bunch of things. Two things that always will make it expensive. One is the size of the thing you're putting there. And secondly, is the mass of the thing you're putting there. So if you can do the same thing with a smaller, lighter rover, then it's cheaper. Or for the same price, you can put two of them there or three of them there. So talking about sustainability, as you mentioned earlier on, we're trying to understand how do we use less Earth resources to get devices onto the surface of the Moon, you being creative, being innovative in it. And also, that's important if you're from a country like Ireland, where we don't have billions to spend on this type of research. So does that mean we can't be involved? Well, traditionally, it probably would have, but increasingly, that's not the case. So this has been a very interesting project. Will it ever get to the Moon? That remains to be seen. But I think that we're learning a lot, and it's been a very it's a journey that has helped us to really think through how you use technologies never intended for that purpose. So yeah.
Okay, so it sounds quite ambitious. So is this something that's actually happened or happening?
So it's still in the process of potentially happening. So the issue, why I say potentially happening, we're going to continue to develop the idea, but it's getting the ride to the Moon is the issue. So that's very expensive. We're piggybacking on other missions. And so some of those missions are tentative and then they get cancelled or get amalgamated and so on. As things settle down, we think that because this return to the Moon, the Artemis program, for example, run by NASA, they're not the only ones. It involves ESA as well. So it does involve Irish companies. Some Irish companies will be involved. And we think there's an opportunity there for us. So I guess, no pun intended, but watch this space. And who knows? But we're looking to even earlier, back to our earlier part of the conversation, we're looking to take some of the things that we're learning to use it in other environments here on Earth. Mm. So, rarely is a good innovation completely wasted just because a project doesn't fly. Going to the Moon in place of that is high risk and full of frustrating turns and twists. So,
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. An awful lot of technology that goes up to the International Space Station ends up actually coming back to the Earth, being used in lots of various places. So there really is a cyclical way of, you know, adaptation between yes. space and Earth, isn't there? Yeah. And I think people just don't appreciate just how much they're actually surrounded by space information and data and use. Yeah. We'll do a whole podcast on that one day.
I think that'll be a fascinating podcast. I think that'll be really great to look at that, because you're absolutely right. It's not so well understood, and that's not being disrespectful. That's up to the space.
It's just become every day, isn't it?
But it's just changing. Yeah, exactly. It's changing so rapidly that all sorts of new interesting things, and influences and things that we take for granted. Possibly some of this podcast, for all we know, because I don't. My internet is getting to you. Some of it might be going through space-based assets, for all I know. So
yeah, it will be.
So that's interesting to think that it's so embedded that we don't even know when we're being supported by space. And as you said, the International Space Station, I think one of the things I always think about that as well is that, you know, there are certain things that you can do in zero gravity that you can't do when you have gravity. And molecules behave differently when you've got gravity pulling them down than when they're floating weightlessly. And we know that there's some really interesting pharmaceutical work being done in zero gravity, which wouldn't be possible on Earth. It may be learning how to do certain things, and then you try to figure out a workaround on Earth. Or maybe we'll see pharmaceutical industries moving to space in the future. We're certainly going to see cloud storage move big time into space. Jeff Bezos, who we think is going to space, I think he said in July with his brother.
Yeah. And apparently a certain person is going to be going up 2 weeks beforehand, Mr. Branson.
Oh, is that 2 weeks? Oh, that's very close then now. This Wow.
Well, fingers crossed it was correct at the time of this podcast, just in case it isn't when it happens.
Well, safety first anyway, Melanie, as well. So I'm sure they'll make sure that all the safety checks have been.
Yes.
And weather, et cetera, et cetera. And until that's right, I'm sure they'll be careful. But that's really good, because whatever you think about space tourism and all the rest, I always think you start with getting the ability to do it. And then maybe you figure out if you can do it, should you do it? But if you can't do it, then it's always a hypothetical.
Yes.
And so at least now we've moved away from the hypothetical. Then the question becomes, what's the regulation around it?
And should we do it, as you say?
And should we do it? Exactly. Yeah. But that's where things are changing.
Oh, I love the way we've left people on a cliffhanger. I think that's brilliant. So just to those of you that are interested in taking part in the hackathon, please check out the website at hackathons.cassini, CASSINI.EU. The hackathon is happening towards the end of June, so it's on the 18th and 20th of June. So make sure you apply soon, otherwise you'll miss out. And do keep an eye out for Dr. Smith, who's going to be bringing us more and more information. And I look forward to doing that podcast about the technology surrounding us. So that's all for now. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be back very soon with another podcast.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.